I do not know what to talk about today, because I do not know what you wish to talk about today. Mahabhuta from Germany gives us an indication that he wants to talk about attachments. And that is an interesting subject, for sure. If anyone else has something they would like to suggest, I would be very grateful. You can email them in. But if not, I will talk about attachments. Actually, it's interesting. I just got another question from Argentina, also about attachments. They want to know what's a good one and what's a negative one. Today, we're going to talk about attachments because, thank you, Argentina, for that feedback, because that is the questions that are coming in, so that's what we're going to talk about. First of all, I'd like to welcome everybody who's there today with us. And thank you very much for being part of this broadcasting experience and sharing with me and with everyone else your association and your intelligence and your input into these broadcasts. Actually, without you, there would be no point to anything we are doing here. And it is because of you that we are able to feel, all of us together, that we are moving progressively in our lives and that there is a meaning to be discovered. There are many possibilities and many potentials in life which are just waiting to be uncovered. Yet at the same time, there are conditions, there are situations within which we live which do limit us. These limitations can be seen either as good or as bad. It depends on how we wish to view them. From one point of view, we can consider these limitations as being a restriction. But from another point of view, we can understand our limitations as giving us a guidance or direction. The reason I am speaking about this is because these limitations or these restrictions actually do relate to the subject of attachments in a very specific way. So let me go back to what I was speaking about and continue with a discussion about these restrictions or these limitations which we have accepted in this lifetime. In the HariMedia.net forums, a person asked me about death and about the experiences we have after death. And one of the more, what that person considered to be a more significant point was our cooperation with and our engagement in the decision-making process of our future. Often people think about karma as a law where people are simply punished or rewarded for bad or good acts without any other consideration. But karma is more complex than that, and to understand our lives now, we do have to understand the nature of what it means to face the consequences of our actions. Many people, not only those who have studied the law of karma through Vedic literatures, but those who have experienced through various Christian theologies or other religious theologies the burning fire of retribution idea, have found it to be very unacceptable. The idea that you're just going to suffer because of what you have done, and you will have no idea of why you are suffering, doesn't feel very comfortable for intelligent people. They have a real hard time with that. Even those who perform crimes in this world, they go before a judge or a jury. The crimes are explained, exposed, proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, sometimes, and they are convicted for those particular crimes. Therefore, there was a direct linear connection between their actions and the reactions to their actions. If one criminal asks another criminal, "Why are you here?" they can say, "I killed somebody, I stole something, I did something bad." However, if one considers that one is receiving all kinds of reactions in this world simply because of one's previous actions, yet one has no knowledge whatsoever of those previous actions, how is one going to actually learn the lesson that the punishment is supposed to have been giving? Therefore, intelligent people reject this idea of one-to-one direct cause and effect without the knowledge of the person who is being involved. Now, there is another way to look at this, a way which is certainly very compatible with our philosophical understandings as spiritualists and with our understanding of the supreme or understanding of some higher authority. If you were to think about a God who is concerned about us, a God who is wishing the best for us, that God would certainly create a situation where our conscious awareness of what is happening to us is a major factor. So from that point of view, let's consider our in-between lives situation, the time that is our in-between time from the time of our last death before the time of our next birth. During that time, everybody is allowed to see in great detail the significant activities which had a very significant effect on themselves and others. Those particular actions which were noteworthy, in other words, were worthy of concentration of our attention to understand them deeper. There are certain activities we have performed in this life which, even though we may consider them small or insignificant, have had a very, very great significant impact on other people, positively. Some small act of kindness, some sharing of love, some way or other in which you have given of yourself to someone else exactly at the time when they need it and when it is very significant for them. And one is actually praised for these acts. One is actually glorified. There is great thankfulness there. And we feel very encouraged to continue with these kind of acts of kindness and love, despite anything that may be happening to ourselves or others around us. And in this way, using a kind of behavioristic technique — it's not a technique, it's just a way of dealing with love — we emphasize the positive aspects of people. Now, there is also the negative side of it, whereby one is performing activities which are based in a mentality or in a consciousness which create problematic situations for oneself or for others. These problematic activities create consequences or create entanglements with others' energy, with our own energy. In other words, our negative, our negative qualities, our negative characteristics, which lead us into actions which cause difficulty to others, are a significant part of what we need to know, what we need to learn. And it is not particularly the specific incidences, the specific actions which are noted, but rather the mentality of the consciousness, the personal quality, which causes such kinds of actions to take place, that is noted. The heart has a particular, of course, the essence being in the heart, we speak of the heart, but the essence of our energy has a particular way of doing things which it is comfortable with according to its realization. And our previous lifetime has demonstrated these qualities or characteristics through a series after series of events which were born from our particular personality. And therefore, those who are in the higher realms, who are helping us to understand how to improve ourselves, point out to us, demonstrate to us, and allow us to see on our own those things about us which need to evolve. Now, some of those things which are suggested to us for our evolution and which we also accept may have to do with negative reactions, so to speak, or negative things happening to us. And here we see where the traditional understanding of karma and the present understanding of karma overlap. Let's use the example of somebody who has been exploiting others for one's own economic gain time and time again. That person has been trying to get money out of others, has been trying to get power or position out of others at the cost of others. Now, that person's particular problem is not the actual act of taking the money, but it is the mentality or the feeling that other people owe them something, or the universe or humanity owes them a debt. Something has happened in the past whereby somebody has taken something from me, so I will now demonstrate my feeling by taking from them. Or I think of myself as so superior to anybody and everybody in this world that I should take and they should give despite whether they wish to give or not. Now, when this mentality is very deep-seated, the higher authorities come together with that person and discuss with them what would be the best way you can think of to actually cure yourself of this particular mentality. And they would suggest various scenarios, how this could be done, and we have to think about it and see if we could accept those kind of scenarios for our own evolution. In other words, whether we cared about ourselves enough to go through this painful process. And if we do accept that painful evolutionary process, we voluntarily, as part creator of our challenges in our next life, enter into that situation. So we enter into that situation and we face, for example, a situation where others are exploiting us or others are being selfish towards us. And we see from the other point of view how it feels. Now, it is not the point that I caused you to suffer, you caused me to suffer, then I cause you to suffer again as a reaction. That is not the point of the evolution. The point of the evolution is to see, yes, causing others pain like this actually is not to my advantage. It's not to their advantage. I have to free myself of all such ideals. So let's use this as an example to see that the particular format or the particular form of what it is that we are going through will manifest in a repetitive series of events coming to us that indicate a change we should take place. Let's look at it this way. Let's say you are designing a roof for a house. And you have trees which fall on your roof, something which is a situation that does happen here. So your first roof cracks because it wasn't strong enough. Then you have to build a better one with a better design. That may crack because it's also not strong enough. Then finally you're forced by these situations of the falling trees to create a roof which is stable under all circumstances. In a similar kind of a way, the activities that, or let's say the circumstances that present themselves to us again and again are challenges to force us to create significant fundamental transformations within ourselves so that we actually evolve beyond that particular defect or that particular negative part of our character, which is not in our own good interests. Therefore, it has always been explained by people who teach such things that when you receive the same kind of a situation again and again coming to you, you should understand it is because you have not yet dealt with it properly. You have not yet grown enough to evolve beyond the situation. That you still have to face it. You cannot just avoid it. You have to face the situation. It's kind of like, in a sense, conquering your fears by simply facing them directly. It illuminates. It shines light into dark places and makes things light again. And it's almost always the situation that we are blind to those particular defects within ourselves which do not allow us to see that they are these defects. We may think of ourselves as very wonderful people, but the external world brings to us again and again situations which contradict our own self-opinion. Therefore, it's our responsibility to understand the message that is coming to us and take some action, positive action, to do something proper to make a change. Now, here is where the concept of attachment is very powerfully present. I also want to talk about attachments that are there to particular ways of living or particular people and so on. But I want to start off by talking about the attachments we have to a way of acting, a way of feeling, a way of doing things which is directly related to that problem we have. For example, if this is just a theoretical example, but I'm sure it takes place more than we would like to admit. In that theoretical example, the idea is there that, let's say, your problem is that you exploit people for some reason or another. Let's say you do things in such a way in which you create problems for others continuously by your actions. So those other personalities who you have created problems with are chosen by you and by the higher authorities and by themselves to assist you to learn to stop doing that. And when that takes place, when that happens, you develop an attachment to these people. They may even take birth as your friends, as your relatives, or somehow or another as persons who have a significant influence in your life. And even without you being aware of it, your attachment to them is part of your growth process. Groups of people come together in this lifetime because they have something to share with each other. Their attachments to each other are part of the process of overcoming challenges. And that attachment may be defined by some spiritual philosophy as a very bad thing, yet seen from the point of view of the lessons that are required for evolution, these attachments are part of a very positive process. But there are other attachments. For example, the attachments to a particular way of acting, as I was speaking before, which are not part of a process, but are actually part of a problem. Let's say I'm attached to exploiting others, using the example from before. This kind of attachment to a way of acting is my problem. It is not part of a prearranged solution. And this particular kind of an attachment is not positive. It is not something that can safely be maintained. Now, that is a very significant point. Here we have two different kinds of attachments. Some of them, we see, are not, it is not optimal to keep them. And in the other sense, it is optimal to keep them so long as we need to evolve. So this is a different way of looking at attachment. In other words, attachment per se, attachment as a concept, is neither good, neither bad. It depends on the context within which it is utilized. Attachment to people is neither in and of itself good or bad. It is all a question of the context in terms of our overall evolution. When it is advantageous for our evolution, to accept attachment is a very beneficial thing. And therefore, one should not, I mean, you can do whatever you like, but in my opinion, it is not advantageous to become detached simply because, as a philosophy, detachment seems to be superior. Previously, we spoke about disintegrative philosophies, philosophies which try to separate you from everything, try to detach you from everything. And we were speaking about integrative philosophies, which try to keep everything in an integrated whole so that we do not see any particular benefit in not being in some situation. In disintegrative understandings, detachment is the main tool. Some people take it to such an extent that they are even detached from all ingredients anywhere in the whole creation, so that one is simply left on one's own in some kind of situation of total freedom from anything, anywhere, at any time. The problem with that, as we have discussed, is that there are situations, there are consciousness, there are energies around us all the time. Therefore, to become totally detached is not possible. I'd like to give you a kind of amusing example of how that kind of detachment would be actually contrary to one's spiritual best interest. Let's say, for example, your previous lifetime was one characterized by irresponsibility. And let's say in this lifetime, what you've really got to understand and what you've really got to evolve into is a consciousness of responsibility, to take responsibility for your actions, to take responsibility for others, to take responsibility for the world you live in, and so on. Now, if you enter into this lifetime and you are again faced with situations of responsibility, yet you choose a philosophy in the name of spiritual development that is based in complete detachment, you are using that philosophy as a means, as a tool to be irresponsible. Such a situation is possible. Now, in that particular case, detachment for you is again the same symptom of your particular problem. So you go through your whole life being totally detached, and then you again have to accept facing the situation of responsibility in the next lifetime. That philosophy is fueled by the ideal. It's an ideal, a theory, that if you act in a certain way, you will be liberated. And when you are liberated, all of these lessons, all of this evolution you should have gone through, all of these things to learn, become null and void, unimportant. You just simply jump immediately to the end result. Now, I know there are many spiritualists who feel like this, many spiritualists who live their life like this, and yet when they depart from this body, they are hit with the wall of their own neglect, of their own unawareness of what they really should have done with their lives. Now, some actually do achieve success in that particular methodology, but it is because they have also gone through the various evolutionary stages they were supposed to. And when they came to the point of being detached, that detachment was a product of their intense realization of having gone through the previous preliminary steps to deserve, to actually earn the right to be detached without any strings attached. This has nothing to do with a position. This has nothing to do with a title. This has nothing to do with anything except your own evolutionary process. Even if there is a really good reason, external reason or administrative reason or any kind of reason to declare somebody in a detached position, it does not benefit themselves and it does not benefit anyone else because they are missing the evolutionary opportunities which they must have to really get to the point they wish to be at. Therefore, if you force people into a situation of detachment by creating a philosophy that simply glorifies this detachment and discourages real evolutionary progress, you are cheating them out of their lives. Therefore, certain attachments not only are good, but they're absolutely required. They're not an option. They are a necessity. Being associated with certain people can be intimately linked up with what you've got to go through in your life to get where you want to go in your evolutionary endeavor. Here's an even more, shall we say, strange example. Somebody may have in previous lifetimes been so detached or so discouraged with their own physical body that they ended their lives, suicide kind of thing. And therefore, in this lifetime, one of their tasks is to be attached to their body, to actually value it. Now, of course, that's a very extreme example. That's not the normal example. I'm just trying to make a point, that's all. Therefore, if you think about the way the Vedic society was organized, you will see that there was a lot of intelligence behind that. I mean, I have no particular concern about how that relates to modern society. I'm simply speaking about the fact that the social organization in that very aware society reflected the benefit of attachment, reflected the benefit of going through the difficulties of interacting in a social context, yet with a spiritual awareness. And at the same time, giving a facility for some portion of the life to learn not just detachment from the material nature, but extreme attachment to the spiritual. We see in that attachment was a very significant part of organization, of life, of existence. Now, in modern times, we don't have any possibility, we will not have any possibility as far as I can see right now, or even for any future I can foresee, to reproduce on a social scale such an elaborate system which nourishes attachment and nourishes proper detachment in the right ratio. But I can also not accept that the circumstances we have now are meaningless, that they are a random result of chance interactions through time which have deteriorated into meaninglessness. I cannot accept that. Rather, I see the situation as an opportunity to learn interaction, to learn attachment, to learn how to get the benefit from these things in a modern context, in another way. When we speak about living in the now, when we speak about acting in the present, when we speak about seeing spirituality in all aspects of our lives, we are talking about interacting with existence. This is a nature of attachment. But the difference is that such an aware people who can come to this platform even without the external structure forcing them into such a situation can understand how to be detached in a very loving way. In the previous times of the Vedic systems or whatever you want to call them, everything was regulated. There were rules and regulations for every itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny little aspect of life. Now, we do not have that. However, if we were to have that now, people would become lazy, foolish, and would not develop their own mental powers. They would not develop their own mental capacities, their understanding, their realization. But you know all this. Let me just go right to an example. Let's say you love somebody very, very deeply. In that love, naturally, there's an attachment. You want that person to be with you. You want to be with that person. And because of this, you keep things going in their own particular way. You keep things going just as you wish them to go, just so that you can keep everything going on in the way in which you feel it should. Now, because of this, you are in what is called the situation of attachment. You want things to be according to the way you want them to be because you are the most interested party in the situation. What is for you good, what is for you valuable, you want it to be. You're attached. But a highly evolved person would say, if somebody I love and I'm attached to like this, for their own good, for their own benefit, feel they have to do something else. They have to go somewhere else. They have to be in some other situation. I shall release them from this attachment. I shall allow them to do that because this is for the higher good of all. In other words, love is a higher principle than the principle of selfishness. It doesn't mean that there's less attachment. The one who loves yet can release is still attached to the person in love, yet is not selfish in their love. Take the example of an enlightened mother or parent, full of love, full of attachment for the child, protecting the child, trying to arrange everything for the child so the child will grow up just perfectly. But at one point, the child wants to step out on its own. The mother, the parent, lets the child do that with support, with love, but is still totally attached. Those who are evolved know when to hold on to something, know when to let it go. And those decisions are not made simply on the basis of their own interests, but are made on the basis of the interests of all, on the basis of others' interests as well. Those who make all of their decisions based on their own self-interest are not very evolved and are attached and do need to go beyond this. And those who don't have that interest, they can allow others to be what they are and to expand as they are and to grow as they are. Therefore, attachment in and of itself is not necessarily good, not necessarily bad. It just depends on the context within which it is. So I think this might explain to a certain extent my point of view on this image of attachment. And detachment This is something that you can manifest as and if it's required for the benefit of all. Are there any comments about this? I mean, I think I tried to explain this as best I could, but I think I may not have dealt with the situation as best as I could, because there are many things more one could have said. She's saying that in Bhagavad Gita, there is also the possibility given to simply become detached from the objects of the senses and attain liberation, in essence. Sure, of course, detachment, simple detachment from all things, could be beneficial. However, it depends on the person. Look at the Bhagavad Gita itself. What is the actual situation in the Bhagavad Gita? You've got Arjuna, who starts off by saying, I'm going to detach. I'm going to accept Nivritti Marg. I'm not going to anymore have anything to do with kingdoms or victory or defeat of others. I'm going to go to the forest and become a sadhu. And then Krishna spends the whole rest of the book explaining to him why he shouldn't do that. So the context of the Bhagavad Gita, if you were to simply use the Bhagavad Gita as your own, as your only source of reference, would indicate that actually one should interact with the world, one should use one's capacities, use one's ability to perform actions, to interact, but without attachment to the results. Now here we have a very interesting possibility. You can act, you can interact, you can be fully absorbed within this world of possibilities, but just don't be attached to the result of your action. Don't expect that every time you do something, there's going to be the result you want. So the detachment is in the expectation, or lack of expectation. Yet, at the same time, it is fully within the realm of acting in ways in which attachments are valid. In other words, you're acting within your friends and your family and your society and your situation, as Arjuna did, but without attachment to the results, as Arjuna did. That's yoga. And I would say that the same possibility is there for us today, to act fully within this world, yet not be attached to the results. Because being attached to the results is not practical. You'll always end up with a headache or frustrated or full of stress and anxiety. Whereas acting according to the time and the circumstances, to do the best thing you can possibly do, frees you from this demand upon yourself, which creates stressful situations. But obviously Krishna is not teaching simple detachment from the point of view of exclusive detachment. Otherwise, there would be no point to Arjuna fighting. There would be no point to discussing this with Arjuna. What do you think of that there in Argentina? Can you give me a tippy-tap on your keyboard and let me know? Or a thumbs up, or a thumbs down, or a thumbs in the middle, or whatever. Thumbs up they give. Okay. Then I'll move on to the next question that's coming from Kamalamala's flat, somebody there. The question is, how do you understand which situations are from a previous life and which we are making now? How do you see when you are creating karma, quote unquote, I say, and when we are dealing with reactions? My answer, or I don't know if I'm answering what you're saying, but my comment would be, I mean, what's the difference? What is the need to make such a separation or understanding of the situations? After all, if the same things are coming to you again, or these situations are coming to you now, the reason it is there is because it's something you have to deal with, something you have to evolve beyond, something you have to work with in your life. So, from that point of view, all of these activities, present and past, fit within the context of that which we need to use as a catalyst, as an impetus for our evolution. Therefore, it is not really important to worry about the cause or the time within which such a situation has developed. In fact, it's so intimately connected with our energy, with our requirements, I don't think it is possible even to make such a distinction. But they have corrected the question by saying, for not making reactions, for not making karma, how do you do it so that you don't make new problematic situations? Well, okay, but that question is coming from an incomplete understanding of actions and reactions. That's coming from a previous understanding that I do something, I get a reaction, I get entangled. If you were to take also another philosophical concept or teaching from Bhagavad Gita, for instance, you will see that transcendental knowledge, which I would translate more as your experience, your deep realization, can burn away the reactions of karma. So why? What is the point of it? The point of it is that you have learned what you needed to learn. Or I don't know if it's so much a question of learning, because everybody knows it. It's a question of experiencing, of coming to a peace within yourself, of not having to act in a certain way because you've gone beyond it. And when you have deeply experienced that which you have come into this lifetime to experience, you have understood it deeply, you have embraced it, which is the most important point, then the question of creating reactions is very much diminished. It's no longer so important. So we can understand that these reactions, these situations which face us, are actually more in the context of guiding us to proper development, not as a punishment. If you think of God in terms of crime and punishment, this is a very human idea. Think in terms of being guided to development, guided to evolution. You'll come closer to an understanding of how God would work and does work. I get the very incredibly interesting question. In other words, karma is a benediction? Yeah, you can definitely say that. That's right. It's a blessing that you would never imagine. Yes, that's true. Sometimes people think that suffering conditions, oh, this is bad, bad, bad. I should do everything I can to have no suffering conditions. Let's just take the example of pain in our own bodies, because this is, I think, the most relevant example we can give. If you have pain in your body, you can say, oh, this pain is bad. I should take some painkiller to get rid of the pain. But that's not really the point of the pain. The real point of the pain is to let you know that something is not right in that part of the body. And you should make some adjustments. You're putting stress at parts of your body where it shouldn't be. You're using your body in an improper way. So the pain is not something in and of itself you should get rid of, but you should figure out why it's there and then try to get rid of it by getting rid of the cause of the pain. But then you ask, I'm just reading your question, why is everybody trying to get out of these situations, including the spiritualists? Because everybody's looking for the easy way out. Everybody wants an easy way to a solution to all the problems of life. Everybody wants a formula. You just do like this, you just do like that, you just do like this, and you'll be free from everything. So they have done the process of giving some kind of medication to the pain so that it will just go away. But the pain indicates a problem. And the problem needs to be addressed, not the pain. That one has to deal with the source of the situation. And if you accept some kind of spiritual creation that denies your capacity to find out the source of the pain, then you are causing yourself damage. You are hindering your own advancement. Therefore, it is essential that one listens. It doesn't matter what you have. You are not better or worse if you have more or less pain. But whatever the pain is, you've got to listen to it and see what it's telling you and deal with the root of that problem. Devendra informs me in a very interesting note here. He says, in French language, illness or sickness, named malade or maladie, it means the pain tell you. In other words, what the pain is telling you. That's very interesting. Therefore, any spiritual process should never try to wash away or wash over a painful situation, but should rather give you the facility to deal with it in a very mature and a very compatible way, a proper way that gives you real realization of what's going on in your life. I'm getting these very interesting letters from Kamalamala's flat. The first message was, can we say the most poor and injured and sick people are the most benefited ones? And Mao Zedong said, the worst is the best. Well, I would not agree with the way that is phrased. Because if you phrase it like that, then you might say, well, then I should go out and cause myself as much pain as I can because I will benefit myself in a great way. That's a masochist. And even worse, is the sadist who thinks, yes, if I cause others pain and misery, I'm giving them the greatest benediction. And the absolute perfect combination is when a sadist meets a masochist. Now, this is not actually the most important situation. The most important situation is to understand, if you are already, not by your conscious and voluntary desire to be in a painful situation, but if simply by the arrangement of nature, you're in a painful situation, you can easily accept that as something which you've got to work with for your own benefit. In other words, seeing that pain and everything is very good, that is not a very proper philosophy. But for one who is in such a situation and can really do nothing about it, seeing it as a means by which to evolve is making the best use of the present situation. Well, now I'm getting another question here from the same source. But it is also in that many cases people died in great pain, but they didn't get a nice destination. Let's say you're in great pain, and the whole purpose of your life is to get freed from the pain. Therefore, death to you is a means to get freed from the pain. Listen, many people who were formerly devotees, people who are still devotees, think of themselves as persons who are in great pain, and they look forward to death as a means to relieve themselves of all the pain. Now, for those who are in great pain, and for those who don't know how to use the pain for their proper benefit, or even those who do know how to use the pain for the proper benefit, death certainly is a position where you're out of that pain to a certain extent. But that doesn't necessarily refer to mental pain. People who are tortured by their minds or by their guilt feelings or by their feelings of insufficiency and so on, death doesn't change that at all. They continue to have such feelings. Therefore, I'm sorry to say, being so-called a devotee of some spiritual discipline your whole life and having such feelings about yourself and thinking that death is going to solve it all is a big misunderstanding, and you're in for a big shock as soon as you go over to the other side. You can even be a big spiritual authority, you can even be a great personality or whatever, but if this is part of your motivation, when you go to the other side, you're going to be faced with the reality of having to again go through a circumstance and situation where you can evolve to the point of actually being situated spiritually, not simply negating everything in your life. Death is not really an answer. It's just another place where Your continuous life is going on. And your stage and level of evolution at that point is exactly where you take it to the next platform, the next situation and death, and where you move onwards in your next rebirth. So really, depending on formulas or depending on death as the means of liberation, or even depending on liberation itself, can be a very tricky business. Seems like the message... Oh, there we go. Okay, good. Any other questions coming in here? None? Okay, look. If you want, please give me some feedback on what we're doing, what we're discussing, or even what you want to hear about. You can write me an email, or you can, you know, write in as a comment in the website, on the comments page, or whatever you want. Somehow or another, get me some information on what you want to hear about. I mean, okay, today it worked quite well. You can also wait till the last minute and tell me. That's fine, too. Just makes life a little bit more difficult, not very much. And we can talk about things that you want to hear instead of things that I want to say. Because basically, I don't really want to say anything. It just depends on what you want to hear. I'm here for you. So you have to tell me what it is you want to talk about. It can be any kind of a topic or any kind of a evolutionary technique or something you want to get to, something you want to attain. I just got a question which I think should be given next week. Destinations of people. In fact, we can even use that as our next week's topic. What happens to people after death and why? And about their world and about what they attain. I actually wanted to talk about that this week, but somehow or another I didn't. But if we can talk about that next week, that's also fine by me. So I'd like to end there and say thank you very much. And see you next week. And don't forget, you have the highmedia.net forums where you can always get more time to communicate with me or with others. And I'd like to say bye-bye and great peace and prosperity and love to all of you. Great success in your endeavors.